Breakfast on 2FM.
A big thank you, as always, to the two Johnnies for driving us through the afternoon. It is Monday, July 24th. I'm Shane Dawson, and you're listening to Game On. Coming up over the next hour, Limerick's Niall Moran and Kilkenny's Eddie Brennan will reflect on Limerick's four in a row All-Ireland triumph. Canadian soccer star Christy Gray sets the scene ahead of Ireland's next Women's World Cup test. Greg Allen, fresh from his stay at Royal Liverpool, reviewed the 151st Open Championship. And we'll have all the latest news headlines. As always, if you want to have your say, you can text us on 51552 or tweet us at Game On 2FM.
Game On 2FM.
Good evening. Hope you're having a very good Monday and a very good start to the week. You can tweet us at Game On 2FM. I think it's still okay to say that for the moment, even though they have rebranded, I believe. But yeah, do text us on 51552 or tweet us at Game On 2FM. News headlines before we get stuck into a bit of hurling review and a little bit later on, a bit of golf and soccer chat. Mona McSherry is bound for the Olympic Games in Paris after smashing her previous Irish record in the 100-metre breaststroke at the World Aquatics Championship in Fukuoka, Japan, where she has advanced to the final. McSherry won her heat in 1 minute 5.55 seconds, with her previous best of 106.04 set at the Irish Championships in April. This afternoon, McSherry swam her second fastest time ever of 1 minute 5.96 seconds for second in her semi-final, with 2016 Olympic champion and current world record holder Lily King of the USA touching the wall first in 105.45. McSherry was the fourth fastest of the semi-finalists and will compete for a medal at 1:45 p.m. tomorrow. Ellen Walsh had earlier guaranteed her place in Paris after finishing fourth in her semi-final in the 200-metre individual medley. So great news from Mona McSherry, and here she is now.
I'm just buzzing, you know. I think going into it, I knew what my abilities were, and I really did full-heartedly believe in it, and I think that made all the difference, knowing going into it that I can do this, I can go 65. I mean, that was my target, that and to get the qualification time, and both were done in the heat, so now I can just enjoy racing tonight. I mean, this is great practice for next year at the Olympics. You know, we'll be racing against all the same people, and just being able to move through the rounds and get yourself to the finals and then be as high up on that top eight finish as you can. So that's what I'm practicing here.
So brilliant news for Mona McSherry. We'll all be tuned in. 1:45 p.m. tomorrow is the final. But as I mentioned earlier, great news as well for Ellen Walsh.
I'm super excited. I was reminiscing about my last Worlds, which was 2017, and I remember watching the final with my coach Grace. I was just in awe, because to be able to, you know, look forward, actually be in that final that I was just watching and just so excited to even witness 6 years ago is really exciting.
And it's your second time under the 66-point mark today. How did it feel? Were you relaxed? You'd obviously done a job earlier this morning.
Knowing that, you know, I got the Olympic time and that's inevitably what I came here to do, and then having such a big swim this morning, I was like, look, if I can get anywhere near that tonight, I'll be happy. Bonus. And that's what it was. The final is just a bonus now. Being able to progress through the rounds like I have confidently is great. We've got some great people in there, like world record holders, Olympic medals winners, and that's really exciting, and to be able to race against them is just great.
So good news for the Irish contingent in the pool. There was Irish interest in the draw for the UEFA Europa Conference League third qualifying round today. Shamrock Rovers will face either Hamrun Spartans of Malta or Dinamo Tbilisi of Georgia if they progress against Hungary's Ferencváros. Derry City will face Swiss outfit FC Basel or Tobol Kostane from Kazakhstan if they progress past their Finnish opponents Kuopion Palloseura. Well, Dundalk will meet Belgium's Club Brugge or Aarhus of Denmark if they defeat KA from Iceland. In Gaelic games, Cavan goalkeeper Raymond Galligan is one of three people shortlisted for the vacant Breffni County manager position, with the lacking man being put forward as manager rather than player manager. The Anglo-Celt has reported that the other two names shortlisted for the position are Micheál McDermott, who previously managed Clare, and Jason O'Reilly, who has a county title on his CV with Cavan Gaels, and he, of course, was part of Terry Hyland's management team at Leitrim. The deadline, for nominations from clubs was Sunday night, and Cavan GA will now appoint a subcommittee to move the process forward. Finishing with soccer before we move on to hurling, Saudi Pro League club Al Hilal have submitted a world record €300 million bid for PSG forward Kylian Mbappe, and the French club have given the Saudi side permission to speak to Mbappe. Of course, Mbappe's future in Paris is in serious doubt after the 24-year-old was left out of the club's pre-season tour of Japan. Ridiculous money there. We're going to get Mark Langdon's thoughts on that one tomorrow afternoon. And finally, a bit of sad news, actually. I must say. Former England international Trevor Francis has passed away aged 69 after suffering a heart attack in Spain. In 1979, he became Britain's first £1 million footballer on completing a transfer from Birmingham City to Nottingham Forest. He won two European Cups of Forest in 1979 and indeed in 1980. So terribly sad news for all of Trevor's friends, family, teammates and everyone associated with him. Sinead for news headlines. I am delighted to say that Niall Moran and Eddie Brennan will be joining us because it was a momentous day yesterday. It, of course, was All-Ireland hurling final day as Limerick created history four in a row. Champions.
A huge cheer erupts all around Croke Park with the completion of the national anthem as it was being played in Irish sign language version of the anthem. The Artane band about to depart down the Hogan stands to the inside forwards for Kilkenny. The right man has it, that's old Cody steaming towards the goal, going for an early shot. Oh, brilliant goal from Cody, low into the bottom right hand corner of the net, and he leaps off the ground to celebrate the goal. Killan is out ahead of Hugh Lawler. He has the ball along the ground. He's brought it up now, and off his shoulder is Cian Lynch. Lynch thundering through, tying up a score. Score number two for Cian Lynch in the All-Ireland final, and it's 1-8 to 7 points. Mike Casey onto the ball, and the danger is clear. Out comes their own Hegarty with the ball for Limerick. Over towards Seamus Flanagan. Flanagan's manoeuvring past the 45, close to the sideline. Scoops it nicely. Darren Galan. Galan, he puts up his arm.
My God, pressure was on there. Aaron Galan from the sideline, absolutely brilliant park.
And Mike Casey, brother of high scoring Peters, onto the ball, and now it's Colin O'Neill. O'Neill going for a huge, long, booming score from halfway, and Colin O'Neill has triggered celebration to the sideline. Owen Murphy is about to put the ball out for Kilkenny, and John Keenan blows the full time whistle. The All-Ireland final is over. A Hain, a Doe and Stria Carr. It's more hurling history for the boys in green. Limerick have completed a four in a row of All-Ireland. They've matched what Cork did in 1944 and Kilkenny achieved in 2009.
Behind every team, there's a leader. And our leader is a spiritual guide, a spiritual leader, a person who's given us all opportunities over the last number of years, a man I suppose we looked up for great guide, support, week in, week out. So John Kiely, thanks a million.
Just like Cork of the 40s, that great Kilkenny team of the noughties, Limerick have completed four in a row. Niall Moran, as a proud Limerick man, what's the overriding emotion?
Jesus, we're on cloud nine here. Just kind of the shivers begun up through you listening to the Cranberries playing there from your BT, and actually playing here behind me too. Shane, the celebrations are in full flow. I just said to a couple of guys who passed, I'd say the first day of sunshine you've had in Limerick in the last 8 or 10 weeks. Just in time for the celebration. So look, we're absolutely thrilled beyond all of our wildest dreams. Even coming into the game, I don't think anybody for a second took for granted that, you know, we'd be in this position where you'd have won an All-Ireland, another All-Ireland against Kilkenny, let alone one that brought you to four in a row. So we're riding the crest of the wave, but I suppose the one thing is we're not ready for the party to stop yet, and very conscious that when next year comes around that so I mean, there's a lot of sharks in the sea again. So enjoying it for now, and we're blessed. We're very, very lucky, and we know how lucky we are.
I hear it's an unofficial bank holiday down in Limerick. Are you at the Gaelic grounds actually at the homecoming, Niall, or where are you?
No, the homecoming's actually moved today. It's moved into Perry Square here in Limerick. So okay. The pubs are heaving down here at the moment, and they're just kind of standing out trying to get a moment's quietness or peace. The amount of kids that are coming up, and there's fellas cycling around with bikes with cups, four cups on them, and there's every sort of character making its way up to Perry Square there. So it's like something out of a Halloween horror show in some cases. But look, it's just again, Shane, like, and it's not been, we just can't believe, even as supporters, as fans, as former players, as club people or whatever else, we can't believe what we're seeing. And again, just look, it's, I said it, I referenced it before, it's how they've made us feel as a county, as a people. And again, like we've often struggled with our reputation and our image and a national level and even an international level at times. And I think, you know, our reputation, our image has changed in tandem with the success of our hurlers, as it had maybe with our rugby players going back. But they're just heroes to one and all, young and old. And I think that we have four in a row. I suppose when our family, without kind of boring your viewers, but I know when our family came here from Tipperary years ago, the first person that they would have befriended was a guy called Mick Hickey. He would have been part of the Limerick team in 1936 and 1940. And when we were kids growing up, and both our parents were Tipperary, we lived on stories of, you know, Paddy Scanlon, Timmy Goodboy Ryan, the Mackies, Jackie Power, all these people. They were immortal. There were people that, you know what I mean, that came generations before us. And, you know what I mean, to us, the stories were so real and as if we lived through it. And I'm just looking at my own nephew who's at the match yesterday, and I'm just thinking in two and three generations' time, he'd be regaling stories of Burns and the Morrisseys and the Caseys and Dexon and Keane. And I thought that's just maybe something, and without trying to overplay it, I don't think any of your listeners would think that I overplay it. I think maybe the success of yesterday, it kind of brings a sense of immortality about some of these players. That'll live long past any of us, like, you know. So we're just blessed to be living in the middle of it. Don't really know what to do with ourselves, but for now we're finding sustenance and a bit of liquor and a bit of crack and a few things on. So we'll enjoy it for another few days.
Well, I certainly don't think anyone will be bored or anything by your yarns, Mal. I mean that sincerely. And I do appreciate you taking the call amongst the celebrations. And another man I do appreciate taking the call is Kilkenny legend Eddie Brennan as well. Eddie, listening to those words from Niall about players etching themselves into hurling folklores, is that the general feeling, I suppose, from outside the county as well, looking on? I'm sure there is a bit of disappointment considering the result of yesterday.
Yeah, it is. Good evening, Shane and Niall. Congrats, Niall, for play, we were very, very fortunate that we got to enjoy that. I enjoyed it as a supporter looking at the cricket teams of kind of 92 and 93, and then very fortunate to get in and encounter it as a player. And it's magical, like what those players are encountering or experiencing this evening. Getting to go and meet the families and our buddies and, you know, all that that goes along with it is brilliant. And look, from our perspective, we were fortunate, we had good times, but we're gutted this evening, we're very, very disappointed. We would love nothing more than to have that, but I think we would have to say, hand on heart, you know, we bowed to a superior outfit. They were value for it. They've been phenomenal in what they've achieved to date, and I think regardless if they had to have been beaten yesterday and what they go on to achieve in the future, they are a team that are going to be there in hurling folklore for many years to come. And you know, I mean that genuinely. They have really represented everything that's good in the game of hurling. Very, very humble fellas. I was fortunate enough to cross paths with John Kiley a couple of times, be it in conversations and personally, and you know, he's someone that you'd look up to, he's someone that you admire. And for young lads, you know, that want to aspire to be county players, that bunch of Limerick lads are everything that you would want your kids to be. So they've deserved it. There was no argument about it. I think from a Kilkenny perspective, we were hoping, and I'd done a little event with Niall on Thursday night, we were hoping that things would go right. We were hoping that maybe little events might go wrong for Limerick that would help us on our way. That's how good this Limerick team are. We needed something like that to maybe help our case along. We needed guys to shoot the lights out. And unfortunately, you know, once it got into the second half, once that match was there to be won, in fairness to Limerick, and it's no slight on our lads, we're very proud of them, but they just hadn't the quality to match this Limerick outfit. And they are worthy All-Ireland winners. They're worthy four in a row winners. And I suppose the big thing now is, you know, for these guys, and I relate to my own experiences, you just don't want this to end. You really don't want this to end as a player. So now the challenge for this Limerick outfit is, you know, how much are they going to squeeze out of it?
Absolutely. Eddie, you mentioned the role models and John Kiely and say Paul Kinnaird and all the coaching team as well, but just from a Kilkenny perspective before we chat about Limerick, like Derek Ling coming in there, Eddie, could he have asked anything more from his players? I mean, it's been a phenomenal journey for them as well.
Yeah, it is, and I think when
I think we may have just unfortunately lost Eddie there for a moment. Niall, if I come back to you then, I suppose, and we flip it then to nearly, I suppose, the same question and a follow-up from what Eddie was saying in terms of John Kiely and the role models that they are. Like, even hearing all of the interviews after about how tight the group is, how unified they are. Yes, they didn't have Han and the other players stood up. And Col O'Neill even coming on, banging over a couple of points as well. Like, the togetherness of the group is something to behold.
Yeah, it's huge, that kind of, I suppose, that unity and that respect they have for each other. But I suppose to pick up on the point that Eddie was going to elaborate on, I suppose looking in from the outside, like Derek Ling is always a guy as a player I'm just really, really admired. He endears himself in every aspect as a manager. I really thought that they came yesterday in the first half an hour. They were typically Kenny, the way, the ferocity in which they hit. Do you know what I mean? The way in which they tackled, they hunted, they subdued Limerick in every which way. They came out after halftime, got the start that they would have completely desired. And I suppose, look, it's fair to say, I think, that Limerick in the 20 minutes thereafter the goal produced maybe one of the greatest All-Ireland final kind of segments, maybe overall performances. I don't know, there's people better versed than me to do it, but that's what it took to beat Kilkenny. And do you know what I mean? I said in talking about the, do you know what I mean? We talked about the immortal teams. The ladies' team was a team that lived forever and lived beyond all generations. But in that there yesterday, like, we still saw TJ going toe to toe for as long as he did. And do you know what I mean? You still had Walter, Pádraig, Owen Murphy, all of these guys. And I think Derek Ling, he drained every last drop out of those guys. And do you know what I mean? That is, no matter what manager you are, whether you're over Kilkenny or whether you're over Kildare or whether you're over Leitrim, I just think when you drain every last drop out of your players, that is the epitome of great manager. And Derek Ling is a great manager. And yeah, look, the argument probably made in Kilkenny that they might need to find a little bit of fresh blood, but nobody better than that. And so, as Justin, you were talking about the Limerick players, like everything, every blueprint that was designed for Limerick in over the last 10, 15 years, it came from Kilkenny. There's no point in saying otherwise. They are the royalty of hurling, and they will continue to be. And just because we're enjoying our moments of success or whatever else, I think people here in Limerick would be the first to kind of concur that Kilkenny is the home of hurling in a lot of respects. And so, what I mean, it's as I said, look, next year to come around quick enough and Kilkenny will be knocking on the door. But for today, they have no, there's no shame in the defeat that they had, because for 40 minutes they gave Limerick, so along with Clare, they gave them the most that any team could give against them. So yeah, look, for Limerick, as you mentioned, name check Colony and these guys there, look, they were just, his performance even in the last 15 minutes there, do you know what I mean? When you see Tom Morrissey coming off, and these guys like Tom Colony coming on, must be heartbreaking for a halfback. And look, so that's the team culture that John has created. There's no issues, there's no one throwing ties out of the pram when they come off, there's no one throwing ties out of the pram, they don't make the 26. And it'll be very interesting when it comes back to next January, the amount of guys who saw a lot of game time, like Shane O'Brien, Donegal O'Dolly, all of these guys who were central to winning a National League, who haven't seen game time since, they're going to be knocking on the door very, very shortly. And I suppose it's probably the key for Limerick now is over the next few months again, maybe to find one or two more, just to kind of go with the core group. And look, that's not today's problem. That's for another day.
Absolutely. But the age profile of these guys as well is that they're not going away anytime soon. And we talk about four in a row, and there is so much said about the fitness and the conditioning, but the skill levels of these hurlers, and not just your Lynches and Gallans. I mean, even in towards the back, I think Kyle Hayes at one stage was on the flat of his stomach and still managed to flick it up. Like, this has been brewing for a while. It's been simmering for a while. All these guys coming through the club scene as well, and they've plenty more to give.
Yeah, definitely plenty more to give. And I suppose on an athletic level, they're probably athletic freaks. And so the skill and their, so the fearlessness to be able to try things that nobody else would dare to do. I suppose, look, that's probably taken them to a level beyond what we'd have all seen. Like, so look, it's probably very exciting times in that sense. But just one thing, even coming into it, I know on a personal level, I've spoken here in the show, like, as in, we were so, so wary of Kilkenny coming into it. I felt, even, don't you look at an event from kind of distance, you'd say that all the psychological kind of elements were in Kilkenny's favour, even how they got over the semi-final, even suppose, the way the Limerick had kind of disposed them in the National League final, and that probably sent us into a final with a lot of trepidation. And I think just for Limerick, like, so I mean, when you went 5 points down, you would have said that, Jesus, okay, the pressure is really on here today, but immediately they hit 3 points. And I think maybe after that goal, that was, what, 2-10 to 11 points. Mm. Actually, Limerick outscored them, what, 19 points to 4 or 5 points thereafter. And
were you nervous? Were you nervous at any stage in that first half when Kilkenny were on top that, Jesus, mightn't be our day? Or are we always that kind of had that in the back of your head that you were always going to be confident?
I thought once we had the 3 point score by half time, I thought Kilkenny would have been full value for 5 or 6 point lead at half time, and it's a lead that they would have needed, because like normally in Croke Park you kind of have a swirling breeze. That's not the truest breeze and it's not a really major advantage, but in yesterday's game the wind was decisively going down, straight down the pitch, and you even saw it in Nicky's buckets and obviously Paul Murphy's in the second half, and I felt that we had taken the best of what Kilkenny had to give, because there was no possible way they were going to keep that going. And I think once you had the 3 points back before halftime, bringing it from 6 points down to three, I thought that was critical, because, again, if you had went in 6 points down and you coughed up a goal at the stage in which it is, then it was back to eight. And so that does ask a lot of questions of a team. But look, it was just the way the guys came to form. Like, you know, Giroud probably gave his most complete half an hour when the need was greatest. Keane gave his greatest performance this year when the need was greatest. Peter Casey the same. And look, I suppose that's the ultimate sign of greatness. When the need is at its greatest, you come up with the best of what you can give. And I'm kind of out of superlative saying, to be honest, like, there's a lot of us that are dining out on the back of the success of this Limerick team that didn't enjoy any level of the same success, but like everything you'd always hope, just maybe the struggles of all the younger years might have contributed to it. But there's no contributing to it. They're a generational team and obviously a generational management. And I don't think I think the happiest moment that we all saw yesterday was we saw John Kiely just letting rip on top of the Hogan and running up for JP. He was like 14-year-old. And you know what? Isn't that just how great it really is, in the sense of this is what sport is about ultimately. It's about fun, it's about friendship, it's about unity, it's about family. And those values in the main have always been displayed by the Limerick team. And I think for any team that are aspiring to reach their levels, well, they're all great virtues that they're trying to practice and just copy. Like, and whether that's underage hurling or whether that's at adults intercounty hurling, I think that sense of fun, unity, family, you know, dedication, professionalism, all those elements are there. And that's why they'll be an inspiration, not just hurlers in Limerick, but all sports people.
Well, any occasion that John Kiely gets giddy at, the most methodical man in hurling, I think that's something to certainly be pleased.
He does get giddy, you know. This is the beauty of John, and I suppose, like, so I suppose when we look at, he's going to be compared in tandem to Brian, and obviously Brian's a very good guy. I mean, he probably had a drier sense of humour, but John Kiely is a gas man. He's a foul man, and I suppose, do you know what? You realise that when you're a player, especially when you're an older player, that, so I suppose when you go into a county, inter-county panel at starts, like, the manager is always the moon tour, and so when he calls you for whatever reason, you feel as if you feel nervous. But in John's company, he's just sound. And John, I often think in John Allen, who we had in back 2013, he was one of the first managers. And that's no respect to all the other managers; they're great people. But he could still have a chat, and you don't lose any morsel of respect or any morsel of authority when you can have a chat and a friendship of players, and especially now when, so I mean, people are probably a little bit more brittle and they need a little bit more minding. I think John is, as obviously in his role as a secondary principal, is cognizant of it, but I'd like to meet him later on in the day, Shane. I hope I see him at some stage there and knock a bit of crack out of him, because the piano man is getting a rattle, I'm sure, at a couple of various junctures as we go.
That I actually, Joe, I do have a serious question around that. Like, the personalities of these Limerick players are out there that perhaps we didn't see even in that Kilkenny team. Like, you'd be doing well to recognise a Mick Kavanagh or Noel Hickey, whereas these Limerick boys are a bit more out there. Maybe it's social media and everything else, but the personalities seem to be flowing through as well, which is a good thing.
I say social media. I was in college with a few of those Kilkenny boys, John Tennyson, one in particular, and even listening to Eddie Regale and some stories there the other night, and Tommy Walsh. There's plenty of characters in Kilkenny. And actually, what was the funniest thing, when you'd have been playing with college, like, you'd have looked up to Kilkenny boys and you would have thought that they were doing things so much more professionally in every sense. You had to go out with them after a match, or they were the gas men. Like, and same here with the Limerick lads. Like, do you know what I mean? When they let their hair down, they let their hair down. And even just speaking about our own three boys in the club, like, they're gas men, having a few pints, and they're the soundest men you'd ever meet. So down to earth, such great crack. And look, it's like, Anthony, when you're cocooned in a kind of an environment where it's So it's a stressful environment. It is a pressurized environment. It is, so I mean, it's strewn with kind of traps in terms of things that can go wrong and everything else. But by God, when they let rip, we let rip. And actually, one of the beauties of it now is there was a time if you were seen with a drink, and even at a pub in Limerick here, you were, it was connotations to it. Whereas now, at least, whether they're winning or losing, people respect us. These guys, so I mean, you have to live life, you have to have fun. And as I said, the lights will go out quicker than anyone expects. And so when the lights do go out, you have to make sure you've enjoyed it and listened to and that. They're trying to enjoy it as best they can. And they'll enjoy it tonight, I know. They'll definitely enjoy it tonight.
Absolutely. Well, listen, I want to let you enjoy the celebrations as well, Noel. But my final question for you now that the hype is already going to turn to the Drive for Five, is somebody going to come up with something different? Are there going to be plenty of counties now just chomping at the bit to stop it?
Of course there is, but that's the story for another day. Again, I'm sure there's lads in 10 or 12 hurling counties that tonight they're going out doing their gym session with that venom in their mind, the same as we in Limerick would have looked at maybe Galway in 17 and all those other teams for years. And it turns quite quickly. And again, let's not forget the margins, how tight they were here in Munster. That, you know what I mean, Cork by a point, even Cork themselves having last two games by a point could have been a very different year. And we look at our neighbours in Clare, like, I kind of spared a thought for a minute. I'm just thinking of John Conlon and Davy Mack and Tony Kelly and these guys. Do you know what I mean? You'd have to be a rock not to feel sympathy for them there yesterday, because had Clare been in All-Ireland yesterday, there's every which reason that they might be the ones celebrating today. So it comes around quick enough. And you know what? If it does come around and someone else gets to win it, well, best of luck to them, because everyone deserves to experience this joy. And the thing is made to go around. But here in Limerick, we'd like to keep it for another year to make it go around. But if it's someone else's in time to come, well, best of luck to them.
Okay, well, listen, that is very well said. Niall, we'll leave it on that note. Thank you very much for taking the call. It's been a pleasure chatting today. And it's been a pleasure chatting over the Mondays, over the last while in the Championship as well. So listen, enjoy the celebrations.
Well, Lucien, thanks very much.
That was Niall Moran, and a little bit earlier as well, Eddie Brennan. Thank you both for taking the calls. Plenty more to come here on Game On this evening, so stay with us here on 2FM.
Game On.
Football.
Now, you're very welcome back to Game On, and we continue our build-up to Ireland versus Canada, which of course is live on RT2FM this Wednesday, 1 p.m. kickoff Irish time. And Sinead Farrelly was up on media duty. She was speaking to her own Tony O'Donoghue, and as Anthony Pine writes on the RT website, as the noise and madness of a World Cup blares all around her, Sinead Farrelly takes sanctuary in prayer and writing in her journal. The 33-year-old's journey to this point is one of the stories of the tournament. Farrelly, of course, only returned to the game in March after an 8-year absence. In 2015, she suffered a concussion in a serious car crash, though the true scale of the stress she faced around that period only came to light 6 years later when Farrelly and her old teammate Manna Shim went public with allegations against former Portland Thorns coach Paul Riley. The subsequent investigations found widespread sexual abuse and misconduct in the NWSL. A shock call-up to the Republic of Ireland squad in April has ultimately led her to Australia, to playing Sydney in front of over almost 76,000 people, producing back heels and clever touches in the white heat of elite international football. Here's Sinead Farrelly.
Yeah, that has caused me a lot of anxiety on this journey for sure. I've just lacked belief and trust in myself that my ability was there at this level. And that's something I still struggle with, definitely. But I think it just comes with time. Like, I wish I could have just told myself at that time, like, just give yourself grace and you're gonna make mistakes. I just wanted to be like great, like from day one that I came back. And this journey has been so vulnerable to me to be witnessed in not being great and making mistakes and wanting to do something, but my like body not being able to, or just like my speed of play not being there, my touch being off. And that's been really, really hard for me. But very good, very humbling.
Your touch wasn't off that day against the USA.
I have very high expectations, and I come from like a past of wanting to be perfect and stuff. So I would say from the outside, I think it's a different experience from what I'm experiencing internally. So I can logically be like, okay, it was fine, but I have like way different expectations for myself. And they're not healthy or anything like that, so I'm definitely working on them. But I was happy with how the game went. Like, I think I'm just trying to see, just even on this whole journey of just like being proud of myself for overcoming and showing up, because sometimes it just feels hard to even show up and believe in myself to do that, and just saying like what I did has been enough, you know.
Someone of your ability though, you don't have to be perfect. I mean, good enough is more than good enough.
Yeah, I'm trying to tell myself that, so thank you.
Bea, what did you learn from the game against Australia? An amazing occasion. Mm-hmm. And in the end, you know, Ireland deserved a point.
I know.
Game.
I think it just instilled more belief in us. I think we're learning, like shifting out of this place of, you know, giving so much respect to other teams, to just being like, we can show up as ourselves and go forward from the get-go and attack teams and make something of it. So I think every game's a learning process. And I think for us, we're bummed to not get a result, at least a tie out of that game. But we're just excited to go forward and go for the wins on the next two games.
Did you have to console Marissa? I mean, you know, she plays her heart out. She's such a great athlete.
I know.
And to concede the penalty, she clearly was very upset.
So upset, as any of us would be, and we've all been there, so we all get it. But we know it's a team sport, and no one put any blame on her, obviously. And we all just, like, have lifted her up and supported her, and she knows that and feels that. And every single one of us has been in that same exact position, so we know what it feels like, yeah.
Canada, you know them well, I'm sure. You've been following them, Olympic champions, and, you know, they've, you know, multiple appearances at World Cups. They're going to present quite a challenge. It's a long way to go to Perth as well to take
I know. We're traveling so much, I don't understand.
What are your thoughts on Canada in particular?
I'm more like, I'm excited. Like, I'm definitely someone that puts less attention on who we're playing and more focus on us, and I think at this point, I just truly believe anything is possible. I believe in this team, and I know that if we come out the way that we can face anyone. So, yeah.
And from your own point of view, in terms of managing your own fitness load, is there 90 minutes in you in this tournament?
Yes, for sure, 100%, yeah. And it's like, as a player, you want to be on like every minute you can until you collapse, you know? And so I think that's definitely there for me. My heart is there in that to do that. So I love just giving my all and fighting till the end. And so I hope I get the opportunity to do that.
The role you had to play in particular, yourself and Heather trying to combine on that side.
Mm-hmm.
There was one moment when down by the corner flag and you were supporting her. And then the audacious backheel to get you out of trouble. Where did that come from?
I don't know. Tricks only. We're in the World Cup. I don't know. I think that that's just kind of the player I am. Maybe sometimes it's a lack of respect for like where you are in the field. Like, should you really do that in the defensive half? But I don't know. I felt like it was just going to get us out of the situation. I was problem solving, just playing instinctively, which is like really when I play my best. So I'm okay with it. We got the ball out, so it's okay.
Finally, the USA obviously going for three in a row, and mm-hmm. they're a formidable team. I'm sure many of them were role models to you as well, but it's an extraordinary tournament. Do you think they could do it?
I mean, I truly think that like anyone can win at this point, and I just think that that's so amazing. I think there's been so much growth in women's soccer and in all the countries, and it's more exciting now than it's ever been because anyone can win. And I think in football as well, it just there's a level playing field sometimes, you know, and I'm just like excited. I really think anyone has the possibility of winning, so I'm excited to see who it is.
That was Sinead Farrelly chatting to Tony O'Donoghue. We're going to be getting the Canadian point of view with Christy Gray in a little while. There were, of course, three matches in the Women's World Cup today. Germany had a comfortable 6-0 win over Morocco in Group H's opening match. Brazil also had a big win. They defeated Panama by 4-0 in Group F, while Italy joined Sweden at the top of Group G after the Italians beat Argentina 1-0.
Game on.
Golf.
But now, I am delighted to welcome along Greg Allen, who listeners might have been tuning in last week, and we were previewing the Open on Wednesday, I believe it was, and Greg was alongside AP's Doug Ferguson, BBC's Ian Carter, and they had a bit of a chat. So before we go to Greg Allen live, I just want to replay that back because, well, I did refer to him as the three wise men, but I think I might have just said it was more of a mystic Greg, because who won the Open? Well, it was, of course, Brian Harman.
Okay, a strong runner and an outsider, Doug, and we know how much you love predicting.
Tyrrell Hatton, better be an outsider on this one, because you guys will laugh at me again since I never get these things right.
I'll stick with Scheffler for the favourite.
I'll give you two strong runners. Ricky Fowler, in great form, and Tommy Fleetwood, who I think will really embrace and ride the huge support he's going to have.
I'm going to say that I think Shane Lowry, and I know I'm sounding like I'm really hammering my colours to my flagpole here, but I really think Shane Lowry needs to break out of what he's broke, you know, this sort of top 20-itis that he has, nearly but not quite, and I'm going to go for Rory. There you are. How utterly nationalistic can I be? But you know what? I actually do feel that they are two extremely strong runners. I also have this thing for Brian Harman. It keeps coming back into my head. I don't know why. I just have this feeling that Brian Harman is going to be a really, really strong. I think he was sixth last year, and he's a gritty competitor. Love strategy. Anyway, there you go. There's the vote from the jury, from Ian Carter from the BBC. Doug Ferguson from Associated Press, and humble little me, Shane.
Humble little you, the three wise men. Humble little you, Greg Allen. Just launching it in there so casually at the end that Brian Harman was going to win. And after all that, after my mystic Greg chat, that there's something in the airways. Greg Allen, are you with us?
I'm definitely with you, yeah. I tell you, it's funny, you know when something just blindingly comes across your brain, your frontal lobe of your brain, when you're not really thinking that you're actually going to say it? So Brian Harman was in my head, for a few hours beforehand. I just went through all the runners and riders who might, you know, possibly be a good outsider to nominate. And I didn't really have the full conviction to do it when you asked me. And then I just said, I just can't not say it, because he was in my head for a few hours, because I looked at the type of player he is. I looked at the conditions that were facing the players for the week. I also looked at his world ranking and thought, he's up to 26 in the world and he's got form. He was second in the Travelers Championship only a week or so earlier. So I did also look at the fact that he's got a lot of grit about him, and he would have welcomed the really tough challenge. However, he's only won twice on the PGA Tour before yesterday. So I didn't have full conviction in him. But I actually really just had a sense that he was going to have a good week. The fact that he won, well, and he won by six. Yeah, I don't think that's mixed with Greg. I think that's lucky whirl, Greg, you know? I'm not sure.
Well, listen, 125-1. I know a friend of mine got about that. So, yeah, like that's, it's not bad.
I know someone. I know someone who had 170-1.
Wow. Okay, well.
I have no shortage of people now asking me for predictions. I'm going to retire right there.
We'll brush over the fact that you did back Lowry and McIlroy, though.
Yes.
Listen, I do want to talk about Brian Harman sincerely in terms of
one roll of a ball from being tied second, you know. So yeah, there you go. I mean, he that wasn't a bad prediction in that respect. But look, the reason why I say it wasn't a bad prediction was because the week belonged to one player, and Rory was one roll of a ball from being, you know, joint best of the rest. So Rory had a good week, he just didn't have a good enough week. This happens, you know, like it happened with him at the US Open. Wyndham Clark was just better than him on the final day. He took more risks. He took more, I suppose, chances with really audacious play, and Rory was a bit careful. That was in the US Open. That wasn't the case this week. There was just one player vastly better than the rest, and I mean vastly. 13 under par around Hoylake, the way it was set up with the conditions on Sunday, is a quite astonishing total to win a major championship. And all you have to do is look at the best of the rest being on 7 under par or worse. So the right man won. There's no question about that.
Absolutely. Well, let's hear from the winner now.
You know, I've always had self-belief that I could do something like this. It was just, you know, when it takes so much time, you know, it's hard not to let your mind falter. Like, you know, maybe I'm not winning again. I'm 36 years old. Game's getting younger. All these young guys coming out, you know, hit it a mile and they're all ready to win. Like, when is it going to be my turn again? And it's been hard to deal with. I mean, I think someone mentioned that I've had more top tens than anyone since 2017. So that's a lot of times, like, where you get done and you're like, damn it, man. Like, I had that one. It just didn't happen for whatever reason. So, yeah, to come out and put a performance like that together, like, start to finish, you know, just had a lot of control. I don't know why this week, but I'm very thankful that it was this week. I look forward to coming back for a really long time. This has always been, growing up in Georgia, I've watched, obviously being a huge fan of golf, I watched the Open Championship. We'd wake up early and watch it. And I never knew how much I'd appreciate it until the first time I came and played in 2014. I just didn't know what to expect. You grew up in Georgia, it's all the Masters. It's all, it's proximity. It's where, but I came here and I was like, wow, man, this is unbelievable. The fans are incredible. Everyone understands golf over here. It was just a delight to play. And so, yeah, man, I'm stoked. I'm stoked to come back here.
So he did credit also being heckled after a second bogey that spurred him on. And you know, he's got a bit of there's a bit of an online discourse considering his views on hunting and everything else. But is Brian Harman a name that we're going to hear a lot more of going forward, Greg?
No, I don't think we're going to hear a lot more of him. But on golf courses which are strategic and set up strategically like Hoylake was, and most Open Championship courses don't really play into the long ball striking, scenario that the PGA Tour is fulcrumed around. Strategic bunkering like you had at Hoylake is going to take the driver out of the hands of a lot of players, and thereby players like Harman, who are thoughtful, really work out a good strategy, hell of a good ball striker as well, just not particularly long. Real good control of his ball flight. That was one of the things that I actually looked up before I mentioned him as a possible runner for victory on Wednesday. He's a low ball flight player, and there aren't that many of them on tour anymore, because it's all about hitting it 170 feet up in the air and letting it carry for 320 yards in the PGA Tour. He's a bounce and roll sort of player. He can play the other game, but he plays the bounce and roll, low ball flight, maybe less than 100 feet with the driver. So there was a lot of things about the game he has that points towards him being a factor in setups that are similar to the Open. Some US Open setups would be perfect for him. And of course, this is a guy who led the US Open in 2017, entering into the final round, and only succumbed to the breakthrough victory of Brooks Koepka, who's gone on to win four more majors since then. So there was no shame in the fact that he didn't execute at that chance of victory in the 2017 US Open. So I see US Open setups being really good for him. I can see Open Championship setups like we saw at Hoylake being really good for him as well. But look, he's not going to dominate. He's just not a long hitter. He's just a very, very good player who's on a really good putting streak at the moment. He had 126 putts over the 4 days. I think it's the best in 20 years at the Open. It's an average of something like 26, 27 putts per round with all the greens that he hits in regulation, say 11, 12, 13 greens in regulation. That's phenomenal putting. And he missed one putt out of around 60 putts in between 3 and 10 feet. Missed one of them all week. So that type of putting doesn't last all the time. But when it's hot, it's the way you win tournaments like that and the way you win by six. By the way, he did nothing that Shane Lowry didn't do 4 years ago in Royal Port Rush. He won on a skanky, wet, difficult final day when it's difficult for chasing players to get low, shoot 60.
Unfortunately, Greg has dipped out again. But sure, look, we do appreciate him taking the call and his input on Brian Harman as well. And I think Greg did interview Rory McIlroy as well. And Rory spoke about overall solid performance. Not spectacular, but a lot of optimism going into the rest of the year. So hopefully Rory will be thereabouts as well. Because as Greg alluded to, he was very, very close to finishing well. But it was Harman that had a big lead in the end. OK, we're going to take a short break. And then we're going to get the thoughts of Canadian footballer Christy Gray ahead of Ireland versus Canada on Wednesday.
Game on.
Football.
Now, you're very welcome back to the final part of Game On this Monday evening. And I'm delighted to say Christy Gray joins us now live from Canada. Christy, who is back in Canada, but of course plays in the League of Ireland with Shelburne. First and foremost, thank you very much for taking the call. How is life back home? You're on a bit of a mid-season break.
Yeah, no problem. I'm happy to be here. A bit of a mid-season break. Nice to get the chance to head home to Vancouver, BC. That's home for me in Canada. So it's been really nice to reconnect with family and friends. I've really enjoyed it so far. Thanks.
Good, good. And you'll soon be back preparing, of course, for a Champions League campaign with Shelburne. However, what I do want to pick your brain on is the Women's World Cup. As I mentioned a little earlier, Ireland playing Canada on Wednesday. What's, first off, the general feeling over in Canada, in Vancouver, where you are? Has it been gripped by World Cup fever?
Yeah, you know, I think heading back home, I was really excited and looking forward to the World Cup buzz because Ireland did such an exciting job for the girls, both from the individual counties where each of the players are from. You go in the streets, you see the flags everywhere. And it was such an exciting buzz. And coming home, obviously, Canada, a bit of a bigger country, close to 40 million people. So I guess it's harder when there's different competing priorities in sports to create that sort of same unique buzz. And you know what? I would say, like, comparatively, I think Ireland's done a better job of supporting the girls before going over the Women's World Cup. I think the visibility has been great in Canada. So TSN, which is our major broadcaster, is doing a good job of coverage, integrating different docuseries to sort of show the more personal side of each of the players' lives and that type of thing on and off the field. So I think the overall buzz is exciting. People know about the World Cup and are watching, and you're going into bars, major sort of places where you want to have food, and you see it on the TV. So visibility is definitely great. So that's all you can really hope for.
Absolutely. Well, Canada do look likely to receive a major boost ahead of that Irish match because key midfielder Jesse Fleming has returned to training. The 25-year-old Chelsea star was unavailable for Canada in their nil-all draw with Nigeria last Friday due to a calf injury. Fleming, who usually takes their penalties, and of course that ties in with Christine Sinclair missing a penalty and that match ending nil-all. What was the general reaction? Was it disappointment, frustration that you couldn't get the win against Nigeria?
Yeah, you know what? I'd say it's a pretty disappointing result. We definitely looked a little bit flat. I wouldn't say there was like a cutting edge on the offense, which is obviously necessary at these big tournaments. Jesse Fleming was a big miss. Obviously, she's taken tons of our penalties in the past, and she's pretty ice cold and consistent with those. Unfortunate for Christine, obviously a legend for our country, but I think it'll be exciting, and hopefully Bev will look to maybe bring on some of the younger players in our squad to bring that cutting edge sort of energy that players the likes of Chloe Lacasse brings, and Evelyn Vienne, who's had a really successful go in Sweden, and obviously Chloe Lacasse over in Benfica scoring over 100 goals, recently signed for Arsenal. So we definitely have the depth and the willpower of the younger group, so hopefully Bev will sort of turn to those players, I think, for the matches looking forward.
Is there an expectancy that they'll beat Ireland, or what's kind of the general view now of this match?
Oh, I definitely don't think there's an expectancy. I mean, I guess if you look at the world rankings, I mean, those kind of go out the window. I think Canada should win, given obviously their Olympic gold medalists and yada, yada, yada. But Ireland is right there fighting. It's their first chance, obviously, at the World Cup, and they are doing their very best to make their mark on the world stage, and they've done a really good job at that. Hence their first match against Australia. I think they deserved a point there. And, you know, I think Canada is going to come back into the second game looking to prove a point. Obviously, that first match, I don't think, showed what we're capable of as a country. So it's going to be a really good, physical, stubborn match against the Irish. I don't think they're definitely expecting to win. They shouldn't be anyways, because Ireland's going to put up a really stubborn fight, just as they did against Australia. So it'll be an exciting match, though, nonetheless.
Yeah, physical and stubborn. That'll tie in very nicely. Like, in your somewhat unbiased opinion then, considering you are a Canadian that's currently living in Ireland, how do you see this one going then when it's all said and done?
Yeah, you know, I'm really excited to watch. How do I see it going? You know, I predict a 2-1 win for Canada. God is back, my home country. But I think it's an easy 2-1 win. I think if you see Jesse Fleming back into the lineup, like I sort of mentioned earlier, bringing in some of those younger players and those firepowers that were substitutes in our first match, have them start from the get-go, I think we'll see a different energy and cutting-edge attack. I think playing against Ireland's five-back will be a challenge. Obviously, they have the dynamic wing-backs, which give them sort of a threat up front, but equally strong defensively, and they showed that against Australia. So I think it'll be really tough to break down their back line, and obviously Ireland is really good on the counter-attack and really dangerous towards the end against some set pieces. Cool to see Abby Larkin pop in there and make her mark sort of right away and get a close chance on goal that nearly tied the game. So I think it'll be a 2-1 draw or 2-1 win for Canada is what I would predict. But I think it's going to be an exciting match with lots of chances both ways. So should be a good one.
Absolutely. Here's hoping for a good unmatch, of course, that you can listen to live here on 2FM. Christy Gray, we must chat again. I want to pick your brain on playing in the League of Ireland and plenty more besides, but unfortunately we are out of time. Christy, thanks very much for taking the call. To the listeners, thank you very much for tuning in. Big thanks to Andrew and Laura Lee for ensuring that the show ran smoothly. Bette da Silva is up next after we take a short break and check in with the news desk. I'll chat to you tomorrow at 6. So from all of the Game On team, it is bye for now.